I'll open it up to any citizens' comment periods. I know we're going to be talking about the proposed 2023 budget, but item two is their citizens' comment period. So if anybody has any comments they wish to make, Sandy was anxious to jump up there. Ah, okay. Again, anybody, citizens' comment? Otherwise, we'll go ahead and close that, and we'll move on to item three, which is, as I already mentioned, it'll be the approval of the August 23rd meeting minutes, and then we'll get into the 23 recommended budget. So those minutes are in front of you. I don't know if everybody's had a chance to look at them. Any comments or discussion? Otherwise, we'll take a motion to approve those. We have a motion and a second on the meeting minutes of August 23, 2022. Any further comments on those as presented? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Meeting minutes of August 23 will be recorded as presented. Now, item number four, introduction of the mayor's 2023 recommended budget. Mr. Mayor, thank you for being here. I understand we had some of this discussion and dialogue last evening, but I want to go ahead and turn it over, and we will start the process. And again, thank you for being here and all the folks in the audience as well. I know this is abbreviated schedule, but I'm hoping we can migrate our way through on a relatively efficient manner. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Mayor.
Was that code word for be quick? First of all, I want to thank the citizen members for their participation in this. It's vital for our form of government to have input from all interested parties, and having the two of you and John when he shows up is really important to this process, because you had a different perspective and a level of expertise that's very important to making sure that our budget is right and represent our community properly. So thank you for your service to the community. Appreciate it. Having done this since I've been involved in it since 1990. I do remember a couple of periods where we had finance committee meetings discussing the budget and arguing over whether we should buy new batons for the police department back when they were really batons, or should we buy some used ones? And did they really need that level, that number of bullets? Things like that. So I'm really pleased and proud that we've gone well past that now, and we're talking about the management of the city rather than the nickels and dimes that don't add up to make a quarter. So that's how long I've been doing this. So anyway, I thought it was appropriate to do a little introduction for the committee and the staff who are here, and just talk real briefly about what my goals were in this budget and past budgets. My overriding goal is, at a minimum, maintain the programs that we have in place and the services that we offer in place. We've accomplished that. I wanted to carefully add employees, and I know that all of you share this, carefully add employees that add a value to the community and are effective in doing the jobs of the departments and the city as a function. I wanted to be mindful of the value that we provide to the community rather than just holding on to a function or a job. My overriding goal always is to hold increases in spending to the minimum that can be afforded by the community, and I'm sure you all share that opinion with me, and embrace change. Now, I'll divert for a second. Peggy and Denise, Peggy's been here this is your second budget, 3 years. Seems like just yesterday. And Denise has only been here for 4 months or so. So as the mayor of the city, I want to take advantage of their outside expertise and them not being here for a million years, and embrace any changes they want to make in the document and how it's done. And we got a little bit of that this year. Didn't have time for it last year. didn't have time for it this year either, but there's a little bit of that in the book. I've asked Peggy and Denise to make this document something that's theirs and what they're going to be proud of. There are some changes. As you read through, the narratives have changed and been corrected. The graphs and charts have been corrected and changed. So maybe next year we'll have some time to do a little bit more and change the format, maybe make it more readable, maybe, I don't know, whatever. So embrace change, and I hope you guys do too. I just wanted to point this out real quick. This is a screenshot from the Business Journal's website just yesterday in Franklin. This is the front screenshot from the Business Journal. Mandel Ballpark Commons owners pitch apartments in a hotel in the town center. Estimated value, $200 million yesterday. Also yesterday, How America's Dairyland attracted a Ghana company with a $50 million investment in Franklin. Yesterday, same story, talked about how and why Franklin was picked for an international company. Great news for the city, tremendous. And then later on that evening, a budget that's balanced and doesn't raise taxes. It's a good time for the city, and you're all part of it. So who did all the work? You know, it says the mayor's budget on it. It's really Peggy and Denise and our department heads who've spent hours and hours and hours trying to work through a budget that meets our needs. And they didn't know this, but they were meeting the needs that I put on the first slide. Tremendous work by all our staff, our department heads, and specifically Denise and Peggy. Sunday afternoons, Saturday, they were working constantly on this. And by the way, don't rub real hard on the document, because the ink will smear. There was excellent cooperation between the department heads. A lot of our department heads have been through this a lot of times, so they knew the process. But there was lots of communication between the department heads and Peggy and Denise, some conversations with me, and as usual, a lot of good cooperation. So department heads, thank you very much. The standard procedure that Denise and Peggy do, and to a little bit I do, check the data, check the numbers, back and forth. So you're not going to find, you may find, but I don't think you're going to find mistakes in the document. Bad numbers, bad formulas. They've been checked too many times. Now, it's a big document, right? But you should know that the initial yes-no decisions were based on historical data. What did we spend in the past? What did we earn in the past? What's the trend? What do we know is going on that might impact the budget line item? And that was the first decision point. The second one is where's the common council going on all this? Is this an expenditure that they might want to have? So that's how I went through this. That's how Peggy and Denise went through this and made the decisions on what to cut, what to add, what to delete. And again, I look to you folks to use your professional experience and your experiences as a community member to make decisions and recommendations to the Common Council. Big point, if you want to make a change in this budget, please, please, please come with the other half of it. If you want to add something, look through the budget and find the replacement dollars for it. Because as we've all mentioned a couple times, it's a balanced budget. If you want to add something, find the revenue source, please. And of course, Denise and Peggy are always willing to help. I thought it important. We never look at the big picture in the community, so I want to show you a few slides of where we compare with the rest of the county. Now, I've done these for the county and comparable sized and positioned communities. This one's the county. I want to point out that these slides all are based on per capita data. Okay, so it's more accurate and easier to compare community to community. There are some differences in some of these slides about how the categories are defined and what's included in each category. So just take it as a graphic representation of approximation. So net operating spending, this is the levy. We're down towards the bottom. We're sixth from the bottom in Milwaukee County. Of course, Village of River Hills, there's not many population. And down on this end, Village of Whitefish Bay, they don't have much to spend on, so, you know, there you go. But we're down towards the bottom. We're the biggest community on the bottom end except for Greenfield. These slides, by the way, come from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. They have a municipal data tool that you can go and run any of these scenarios you'd like. So that's net spending. This is the one Chief Oliva is going to pat me on the back, I hope. Shows the per capita spending on police services. We're down here at about $300 a person. Bottom of the list, except for the Village of Bayside. Now, Chief's going to punch me in the back. I'm kind of proud of this. The service that the Chief and his staff give us for the dollars they spend is tremendous. Is something we all ought to be proud of. But we all knew in 2018 that the community said, nah, we're not going to add any a lot of money to the police department and turn down a referendum. So I appreciate the work that the chief and his staff does to manage the budget we give them, but we are at the bottom of the barrel. Here's another one, fire and EMS. Same situation. We've got a police, fire command staff that I believe had, along with our police department, I believe our fire command staff has the finest EMS service there is in the county, if not the area. I know of no other community I'd rather have a heart attack in, because these guys are the leaders. And with Shannon added to the staff, can't beat it. But again, our frugality puts us towards the bottom of the barrel. Road spending, well, this one I take with a grain of salt. Because a lot of our roads are newer roads. But still, we're towards the bottom of the barrel with the road spending. Here's levy and the burden on residential. Now, I'm not sure how they define residential. I don't know if they have apartments in this or what. I don't know. But here's this one you all ought to be proud of. Fourth from the bottom in levy in Milwaukee County. That's a good thing. Because that means that our taxpayers are getting good value. And if you look at the dots, not bad. We're right in the middle of where the rest of the communities are in terms of the burden for the residences. So that's good. Shared revenue. This chart, I believe, is inaccurate. We're second from the bottom. That's really, we're off the chart. We don't get any state aids, relatively speaking, for general aid from the state anymore because our tax rate is too low, we're too efficient, and our management team does a great job at managing their budgets, unlike City of Milwaukee. Yes, that's on the record. Yeah, I know. Cavalier can be mad at me. Municipal debt as a percentage of state limits. Peggy and Denise are going to talk about this later. This number is 2019 numbers, so this chart is a little inaccurate. It's a little different. It's a little higher now. So this number, the one good thing about our debt, aside from being below where we really want to be, is that it's all secured by TIF funding, TIF development. So right now, we have no issues with burdening the taxpayers with paying this off. Fund balance, also really good. And I'm pleased with that. I did make a comment last night to the Common Council that we as a community have to be very careful on how we spend our fund balance. We have to realize that it's a savings account to be used only either in a planned manner or in a very serious emergency situation. That we can't be looking at it as a piggy bank, because it's not. So, every year, twice a year, all of the elected officials get phone calls when the assessments go out and when the tax bills go out. The assessments, the one is always, oh, my assessment went up $50,000 and you're going to raise my taxes that much. And then we all go into this conversation about what percentage did it go up. And so I thought I'd put together a chart. These are my home values and tax bills. So I graphed the Franklin levy increases. This is dollar for dollar. This is the trend in the tax levy. And in 2017, I made the conscious decision that I had to break away from being a zero levy increase because we were falling farther and farther behind with our ability to keep pace with inflation and expenses relative to the way that the state allows us to derive our revenue. So at any rate, we started taking our growth, and we had strong growth between 2017 and now, and still now. And this actually only represents less than 10%, or a little bit more than 10% in increase. So the chart's kind of weird in terms of graphic. So here's the city tax rate. And I'm not a rate guy. Peggy and I have this conversation all the time. I'm not a rate guy, but a lot of people like to look at tax rate. And this is the net effect of an increasing property value. You see that our tax rate here in 2022 was $4.82. What you have in front of you is $4.38. So it keeps going down because the value of the homes keeps going up. This is my house. Built it in 2001. 2020. So you see up and downs. This is the annual aggregate equalized value of the community. So my house didn't match the rest of the city in terms of assessed value. And I show this to constituents. I said, your assessed value is relatively meaningless. Forget about it. It doesn't matter if it went up 50 grand or 100 grand for that matter, generally. It's how does it compare with the rest of the community? Here's the property tax I paid. I'd like to have somebody that's good with Excel put these charts, layer them. Because here's what I've been paying in property tax. And that's where my assessed value has been going. But this is a function of that. And it all works together. But at the end of the day, there's no real good correlation because we have five taxing districts. But I thought it was important that you all saw the trends that's going on these days and how as a community, I believe we're doing very, very well in managing our budget. This is more political than it is anything else. Here's our gross value from 2011 to 2020. And here's in the graph. The value of this community's gone up almost a third in less than 8 years. That's huge if you think about it. And we're talking billions of dollars. Our value now is 5.2?
5.4 today.
5.4? $5.4 billion. And this is not 10 in, but, and it was 3.6 in 2011. The value of change in our community is tremendous. And that's what's been able to fund our increasing department spends. So I just want to show that to you. I just want to thank you again for your experience and working with us. And anybody want these charts, they can have them. Anybody wants the spreadsheet, they can have it. Do your own. So anyway, so that's what I have. Thank you again. And I'm going to be here for a couple of departments. Do you want to take it out of order and do planning?
Yeah, actually, first.
Regular.
In front of you, some of you have seen the big book before, some of you may not have. So that is your sort of Bible, your binder with everybody's presentation or numbers in it. You also have in front of you the agenda, but then there is, we provided page numbers. So planning is going to be going first, and then the page numbers that planning is on are in front of you. And then I don't know if it would come up this evening, but we do have a suggested motion. So if you are wanting to make a suggestion for a change, there's some suggested language here just to help you out a little bit.
First of all, let me introduce Regulo. Regulo is our senior principal.
Principal planner.
He's, frankly, he's been doing a great job pinch hitting as our planning manager as well and our zoning administrator. He comes to us from Argentina.
Venezuela.
Either one of those. He's been doing a great job. But I think you guys ought to ask him some really hard questions. This budget was put together by his predecessor, Heath Eddy, so. But Regulo's a smart guy, he'll figure out.
I might just add a couple of comments to Mayor's comments before we kind of dig into the detail here. And I see Peggy and Denise have 10 or so departments for us to kind of look at tonight and review. But just to follow up on Steve's comment, you saw some of the numbers and what's happening in the city of Franklin. I see that only continuing, obviously, in my opinion, because of the opening of the south side of the city with developable property. Sewer's been installed in some cases, water in many cases. We see some developments there already. Business park that's in process. So I continue to see that growth continue. So that's a good thing. Those values will continue to go up and share in some of the costs. But as I'm sure our emergency service and police departments will tell us shortly, that there's a offsetting cost that goes along every time you put in a new street address or a new business location in terms of demand for services. And I think that's the delicate balance that we have as we kind of go forward here. What, in my opinion, is the next step of growth in the city and being able to bring those level of services along and keep them at the level that the citizens have enjoyed and, in many cases, I think expected. The mayor mentioned maybe at a very efficient manner. Nothing wrong with that in government, but at the same time, maintaining a level of services that's warranted for the, you know, type of development that I see continuing. I think it's no surprise that Franklin is one of, only two communities, I think, that has raw land available in Milwaukee County of any significance. Some might say Southridge Mall might be a, you know, something that might be reconstructed or redeveloped. But I think you know where I'm coming from with that comment. So that being said, as the committee looks at this, I mean, I think we have to not only look for 2023, but I know Peggy will keep us abreast on, you know, how do we grow and step into some of these things as we see this expansion continuing to happen. I think Franklin continues to be a great place to live. School district is strong. Safety record is there. The types of attributes that people look for when they're looking for a residential community. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Denise, and I think we're going to start on page 194, it looks like, in reviewing some detail with the planning group.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the introduction, Mayor. Regulo Martinez, Principal Planner with the Planning Department. So one of the changes that I would like to note in this budget compared to previous budgets is the addition of the planning intern. It has been increased to a 0.8 equivalent full-time. Why is this required? Because in 2021, the planning department has assumed the administration of the sign ordinance. Now we review and issue sign permits, so that has increased the activity, as you can see in the activity measures table. So that's one of the reasons that we are requesting the addition of the planning intern. I would like also to know that we are in the preparation of the the Unified Development Ordinance rewrite. We hired a consultant for that project, but the staff have to also spend work hours working with the consultant to get to advance the project and get the draft new Unified Development Ordinance. These are the major highlights that I would like to note. Do you have anything to add, Major?
A couple things, yep. Of course. You expected that, didn't you?
Sure, yeah, I did.
One of the initiatives, Dennis, Chairman, you talked about it briefly. One of the initiatives coming from the planning staff is we need to look at the cost of development as well as on a more systematic way than we've done it before. Typically, we look at the cost of a development by asking the developer, what's your value in it? And then the police and fire department, DPW, all offer an opinion as to the cost of the development. We're looking at some point to get more systematic about that and understand what the real cost of the development is to the community. So that's something that the planning department's talking about. There's nothing in the budget yet to do that. It needs more guidance and more direction from the department head, which was the other thing I wanted to mention. We have offered for a new planning manager, and we expect to have background checks and stuff very shortly. So I keep telling Regulo, help is on the way. And Regulo mentioned the planning intern. That position's also going to help get the little stuff off the plates of our planners so our planners can do the heavy lifting.
Correct.
It depends. If it's part of a TIF district and they're asking for cash, some kind of development incentive or whatever, then we actually have two consultants that we work with to determine the validity of the request, and that's paid for by the developer.
That personnel position could be filled in possibly by year end then?
The intern?
No, the manager position.
I hope it's sooner than that.
Okay, so we would be going into 23 with a fully staffed department.
Do you want to talk about capital? Do you want to talk about the comp plan and corp? He's not aware of it. Okay. I placed in the budget, in the capital budget, update for our new comprehensive master plan and the comprehensive outdoor recreation plan. The city has three different ordinances that dictate how development happens in the city. The base ordinance is the Unified Development Ordinance, which specifies building heights, setbacks, land use, that kind of thing, as an overall direction for the city. Then there's the comprehensive plan, which is dictated by state law, which defines specific zoning categories for each parcel of land. That hasn't been done since 2005.
It's overdue. The comprehensive plan is overdue since 2020. The update.
Yeah, the update was that small. So really, it's a 2005 plan that needs to be updated globally. There's a lot of work involved in both the Unified Development Ordinance and the Comprehensive Master Plan in terms of logistics, notices to the public, public hearings, votes on the changes. It's going to be a big undertaking, but since the original plan was done in 2005, we're long past due in getting it done. So that's in the master capital plan. There's two portions of it. There's the comp plan update, which will determine zoning for each parcel by parcel, which will reflect the Unified Development Ordinance changes. And then there's the comprehensive outdoor recreation plan. That's the plan for the parks and how we handle open spaces in the city. We need to update both of those so that we can apply for state grants. Right now, we don't qualify because of the age of our plans. So that's in the capital plan.
Okay.
I can talk some more. What do you want?
That's on page 231, Denise. Am I correct?
The planning is on page 231, correct, at the bottom. You can see the comprehensive master plan and the corp are combined into one project, and we've allocated $80,000 in the 2023 budget and another $80,000.
That would be done by consultants, along with staff.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I thought you were going to take a break. I've got one question for you, if you don't mind. I don't know how else to put it other than what's the life expectancy of this intern? Is it going to be every year you get a new intern, or is it going to be a position that if they do well, they stay? I mean, what's the long-term vision for them?
Well, that I don't know at this moment, but the last intern was here for approximately 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah, the last intern that we had, that it wasn't a full-time intern, it was shared with engineering and planning.
Okay.
So she worked here for about 2 years.
Do they get annual increases as well? Okay, and there's a formula for that, I assume. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was just going to add a comment, too, before I ask for any other. Some of this planning update, at least as it relates to parks, is pretty imperative given our situation with potentially expiring park impact fees. So this is an additional incentive to get some of these things up to date so they can be planned accordingly. And I think I see some hands over here. Shari?
And maybe I see the city administrator wanting to get on that too. I think we are well out of the woods for a few years now with our park impact fee spend down. We're in a good place because we are using that now for the purchase of the Southwest Park that council okayed last month.
Okay. That'll buy us some time, but there's a pretty big pool there, so that has to kind of be a continuing.
Granted, it's something that we'll need to watch going forward.
Right.
But,
so, yeah, we not only have our capital budget, but we also have a park impact fee spending plan as well that was created last summer. So we're trying to work through that and try to stay ahead of that. We'll be talking about that on the third night of the budget meetings when we talk capital.
Okay, any other comments or questions? I know this is short notice on some of this information, but at least during the planning section. Hearing none, let's move on then.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have inspection services.
Yes.
Scott?
Good evening, everybody. Scott Satula, Director of Inspection Services. Mine should be pretty quick, because I know you got a lot on your agenda tonight. Other personnel costs, our budget remained pretty much the same. There are a few decreases in operating supplies, vehicle support, equipment rental. Other than that, they're pretty much the same as last year. Not requesting any new vehicles for 2023. We do have two in the capital budget for 2024. Staff positions remain the same at 9. Inspection activity, we are doing about 3,900 inspections for building inspection, plumbing inspection, about 1,300 a year. Electrical inspections, about 1,700 a year. Revenue forecast for 2023 is going to be pretty similar to 2022. Building permits, about $675,000. Electrical permits, $170,000. Plumbing permits, $140,000, for a total of $985,000. We've got a lot of new commercial projects that are coming in, so things are going to ramp up pretty quick here. We've got currently, we have the HSA spec building that's under construction. We have the Sleep Inn Mainstay Hotel coming in, or actually just starting. We have an Exos project that may start in the third floor of the Mosh building. The Pennant Hotel, 35-room hotel. We've got the Saputo cheese plant ready to start. We've got the Seasons at Franklin apartment project ready to start. That's 9 20-unit buildings, 3 24-unit buildings, 252 apartments. We've got the Rise Commercial Billing District that's coming in over on Loomis 112th Street in that area, the Bear Development, 18 small commercial buildings. And, of course, the public square that you heard about tonight. I don't know exactly when that's going to start, but that's going to be a rather large project for us. There's the M1 building over by Ballpark, 78 apartments, 6,000 square feet of retail, a rather large building. And then the retreat that they're talking about, too, another 430 apartments and 16 townhomes over by Loomis. So, again, you can see there's going to be a lot of activity ramping up for departments, so we're ready for it, but it's going to be a challenge, but we'll get through it like we do. The only thing that would concern us is the we're hearing about concrete shortages and labor shortages. I think we're all hearing about that, but we don't know what that's going to do to construction. It could slow things. I don't know if it's going to stop it, but it can certainly slow things down. So you may hear about that. Residential has been pretty steady for new home construction. We predict about 70 new homes this year, and the same for next year, based on projections and what's been happening. Interest rates kind of calm that a little bit, but it could ramp up quick too. We still get all the small project permits coming in, your additions and remodeling projects, rec rooms, decks, sheds, and fences. That never stops. It flows in constantly. But basically, things have been going well with the new BSNA software. It's helped us to improve our efficiencies in our department and actually across several departments, because we've got planning, engineering, building inspection, and health and fire now involved with the BSNA software. So it's really helped us to communicate, and everybody knows where the project is, the status. They can get right on it and see what's going on and know when we finish and where we're at. So that's helped a lot. Didn't have that a couple years back. So that's helped us to be more efficient with our staff. Our goals for 2023 are to continue to handle these projects coming in, improve on our customer service initiatives that we started. One other thing that will be a little bit of a challenge, Wisconsin plans to jump two code cycles under commercial building code and adopt the 2021 version of the international codes, which is what they follow in this country, our country. So we're going to have to train for that and get ready for that, but we're already ramping up for the changes. We kind of already know what's coming down. We've got some training already that we've had done. I've summarized all the changes, so I kind of know what's going on there. So, but that'll be a challenge for our staff. Mm-hmm. Other than that, do you have any questions?
Any questions from the committee relative to inspection services?
I just have one thing. Scott talked about the BSNA software, but I think he really underplayed it. What he's done with the department over the last 2 years has really brought us to the current time, and we're getting contractors online, getting permits and different things like that, and it's been nothing short of amazing. So I just want to make sure we talk about that a little bit.
It's glad to hear that from my perspective. I mean, a few years ago when we were talking about those expenditures and talking about the efficiencies and where technology is going, yeah, I have a favorite saying. I know just enough to be dangerous sometimes with this new stuff, but this is where efficiency has to be garnered from, and it's encouraging to hear that that is taking root. So thank you very much for embracing that. Hearing no other comments or questions, let's go ahead and move on.
Thank you.
And next we have the police and dispatch.
Good evening. I'm here with Assistant Chief Craig Lindman, who is integral in creating our budget. So, in general, I'll point out the obvious. We have the largest individual department budget in the city. We have most employees run 24/7, so that's majority of our budget is salary and benefits, which I have little control over. The other large portion of the budget, of course, is the operating costs and some capital expenses. And I can say the majority of those costs, that part of the budget is basically maintaining existing services. A lot of it is just maintenance contracts, replacing outdated end-of-life equipment and capital items. So that's pretty much keeping everything as is. There's just maybe a handful of items that we asked for that were new We should be able to get most of that within this budget. I will mention that the mayor did some trimming of our operating cost, and I would characterize this as a tight budget, tight operating budget, but we will do our best to stay within it, and I believe we can, again, provide what I believe is the high-quality service that we have been providing. I believe we can continue to do that. The one, I guess, new item of note would be a community service officer position that the mayor is recommending. That does two things for our department. Number one, it brings in a civilian that we can assign some non-important or non-law enforcement-related duties to a civilian to relieve an officer from those, to free up an officer to do more, again, sworn officer duties. Another objective of that position is we want to look at that position as a trying out of someone who's interested in law enforcement and give that person a look, and hopefully at some point, if it works out for both, to use that position to recruit and assign or give that person a an open vacant police officer position at some point. That's the general overview. If you have anything specific, I can address, so we have to.
Chief?
Yeah.
What kind of activities are you looking at for the community service officer?
Well, we don't have an exhaustive list, list right now, but it'd be like vacation checks of homes, taking some minor complaints and over the phone or someone in the lobby, again, telephone complaints that might come in, filing, just some general, more administrative functions that an officer has to do as part of their assignment, and they'll be able to farm those out to a community service officer.
Those, to me, would be worthwhile activities. It seems like the Greenfield officer pretty much runs around and writes parking tickets.
Right.
Of which I got one.
Oopsie.
Well, we won't have them do that. I mean, we don't do a lot of parking enforcement because at Greenfield and many other communities have a parking permit system, and there's a lot more violations. We have a lot less parking violations than other cities because of that. Plus, just the nature of our community with everybody, almost everybody having long driveways and garages, there's not a lot of on-street parking, so maybe that isn't an issue. But there's going to be plenty for them to do, again, administrative.
I just wanted to make sure it was worthwhile activities, and it sounds like it is.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
Chief, would we also then need to purchase a new vehicle for that resource officer?
No. We will use existing vehicles for them to use if and when necessary.
Okay, thank you.
Did you want to talk about any of your capital, too, Rick?
For capital, again, it's basically replacing existing capital items that are end of life and need to be replaced. Of course, the largest expenditure is on patrol cars, which we try to keep on a fairly regular rotation schedule, so it keeps expenses predictable, and it keeps maintenance costs down after several years of heavy use. They tend to break down and invest more in repairs, and at some point it's not really cost effective, so we try to keep our cars in fairly decent shape, keep the mileage to a reasonable amount of miles, and that seems to be, has been very effective and efficient for us. So that's the largest capital expenditure we have. The other part of that, we have a fairly big expenditure for our watch guard squad videos. We are in the process of transitioning from a Panasonic video system to a watch guard. We found that to be a better system, and we started out for our motorcycles because that was the only company, one of the only companies that provided a dedicated video system for our motorcycles. Panasonic would have to do some jury rigging, we didn't like that. So we're in that transition to that company, so that's part of our capital expense. And then there's a software upgrade or additional system to our CAD RMS system that we're adding. And that's the basic capital expenditures that we're asking for.
Yes, and this question may.
Are you licensed for that?
Pertain to across the board in terms of, have we assigned a basic percentage across all departments for an increase in salaries?
We did.
Do you have a line item for merit increases at all, or is it just rolled into the salary increase from the budget, from the annual budget?
The regular increases are in that budget.
Okay.
We do have a merit pool in an unclassified account.
Can I ask a follow-up question then?
Mm-hmm.
You guys run a very tight budget. It's a curiosity question, so forgive me for asking if it's not, it's out of line. Are you getting enough for merit increases to reward your officers for their service, or is that something that is an issue in your budget? And please be honest with you, I'm just a citizen guy, so it's a curiosity question for me. I'm also an ex-cop.
You know, that's not a simple answer.
Okay.
there's a lot going on nowadays with difficulties in hiring people. There's a lot of reasons for it. We're looking at a number of ways to try to get good candidates. And I think incentives and bonuses are one way to help, but it's not a panacea.
Is it helping with retention?
Well, that's another, again, not a simple answer. And I know the city had implemented some incentive measures to use. I think there's limited value in the police department, how we implement that.
Okay.
Again, it's a very difficult thing, and everybody has different motivations for coming and leaving. So what might work for one person won't work for another person.
Right.
So I certainly think it should be part of the program to try to give incentives to people to stay. But we really haven't implemented that yet in the police department. And I do have some concerns how that's set up and how it might work. And again, I've seen other departments offer some very substantial signing bonuses that work only to an extent, because that's not the only reason why people aren't coming. So I don't know, it's not a straight answer, but it's such a complex issue. I think it's just one part of trying to retain and recruit.
No, I understand. I've worked in corporate America for 30 years now, so retention, employee retention is always a challenge, but with your department, it's an important challenge. So that's
absolutely
why I ask it. It's not something that obviously we're going to address tonight, but it's something I may work with the mayor on, see if I can help kind of find ways, and it's a passion of mine. So
well, I appreciate that, and it's definitely an issue and something that needs to be part of the whole overall program to retain and recruit.
All right, something I will look for a later date. I apologize, but it was a curiosity question. I needed to know the answer to it, so thank you.
Any other questions? Did I see a hand down on this end? No?
I just have one thing. The police department is doing a really cool thing with emergency services, and I know some of you are familiar with it from different communities, but we have what's called a WEN system. Craig, I can certainly let you talk about that if you want, but it is really cool because there's something called geofencing. So when there's an emergency in an immediate area, right now we don't have that capability, and there's some folks at the police department that have been working really hard on that, and I believe end of the year is still the goal to have that live. So I think that's going to be a really good thing for the community. So anybody in and living in the community who's on our registered list, because that's our normal emergency system, but then anybody also who's just has a cell phone or a device that's connected to the emergency system nationwide will be alerted.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, thanks. I want to touch on a couple of things. One is on the capital budget, squad cars for the police department. Those of us who are older remember buying a couple of Crown Vicks for 18 grand a piece, throw about $5,000 worth of radio and accessories in, and off you go. Today, it's $80,000 plus accessories. So that puts a big pinch in our capital budget. chief's been very good. The chief and assistant chief have been very good about managing the use and abuse of their portable offices, and they've done a very good job at that. It is something that we need to be mindful of because, frankly, Ford Motor Company wants to make a profit, and those vehicles are their most profitable lines, and they're going to continue to change them and raise the prices. So at some point, we're going to be $100,000 for a squad car, for what we believe is a squad car. It's a mobile office, but so we need to keep that in the back of our heads as we go forward, too. And Chief has been a leader in the protecting of his officers in their mobile offices. So you don't want me to talk about what we do.
It's not a big secret.
Back when the Dallas incident happened, Chief came to me, and we found a way to put bulletproof shields on the side windows of these vehicles. If you remember, the Dallas police officers were shot by snipers through their side windows. Our officers, we believe strongly enough in their safety that we've added that. And that's all additional cost to these units. And unfortunately, the original promise that by the manufacturers that you could move these things from old unit to new never happens. So I commend the chief and his staff for their management. I typically don't give them all the squad cars they need, but at some point you got to replace the office, right? And just as a side note, I was with Peggy, I think Sunday night we talked about this, it's chairs. Dispatch used to buy $300 chairs. These dispatchers are in those chairs 8 hours a day. No, you don't do $300 chairs. Get a good chair with back support and all the rest of that. That's my philosophy. If it's your office, you ought to be properly outfitted. And Peggy bought a $300 chair a couple of years ago. Come on, really? She's in that chair, 15 hours a day? So that's my philosophy as you go forward. Police recruitment, tough, tough business. The biggest advantage we have is, first of all, the overall community, but the command staff that we have. The reputation of our department in the police community, from what I can tell, is heads and shoulders above every other department. We're a valuable department, and we're a desirable department. Problem is we're in a competitive environment. It's a bidding war out there for police officers, and our criteria is a bit different than everybody else's, and I'm speaking for you, so tell me if I'm wrong, but we look for a different kind of police officer than is generally available, and that's tough. So the chief's been very flexible. Peggy and I try to be flexible. Personnel committee and the common council all try to be flexible in the hiring. But it's tough, and the same with the fire department and Department of Public Works. There's an even bigger challenge. How do you compete with a private contractor paying 30% more, no nights, no weekends? You know, so that's something that goes around my mind all the time. Peggy and Denise think about it all the time. I'm sure the common council, it passes through their minds too. So that's a little more than you really wanted to hear, but there you go. That's what you pay me for.
Any other comments for the police department or the numbers? As was said, the bulk of that is salary and benefits. Chief, I just have one comment to ask you to make. What do you see out there in terms of shared call responses and what other communities are doing in terms of just activity levels and so forth? Is it up, down, about the same? I'm just curious as to the policing environment, I guess, with our surrounding communities.
Well, I got to say that we have an outstanding sharing of resources in Milwaukee County. It's pretty much always been that way, at least for a long time, I should say. We regularly rely on each other to augment street coverage. I mean, we all do our individual staffing, of course, but it's not uncommon that in any given night when a particular city gets busy that one of us will have to call for another car in another city to help us out. That's routine. We have formal MOUs in place with other agencies throughout the county and adjoining counties called the SMART system, where where you have a huge need for resources for a major event, and we have a protocol in place that we can ask for personnel from surrounding agencies to respond, you know, because no one agency is going to be able to handle a major event, you know, active shooters. So we have a lot of those different MOUs in place and informal sharing of services and equipment in place. So we do a real good job to share all those responsibilities.
Okay, thank you.
Can we buy you used batons instead of new ones?
I will readily admit that the city equips us well. I mean, we have good equipment, and I think it's well worth it. I think it's a good investment. I've always been a strong proponent of technology, so we have a lot of technology, and we continue to add technology, cameras, and other systems. I think originally the main reason and goal was to obviously to increase our efficiency and reduce the need to add personnel, you know, staffing. Now that's still important, but now I think it's even more important because we have a hard time getting personnel. So as hard it is to fill our vacancies, we're going to need to rely on technology to fill that gap. And like the mayor said, we have certain standards that I don't intend to reduce the standards to get more people, because I'd rather have a vacancy than something that's going to be a problem for the department and the city. We have adjusted some of our criteria, but I don't believe it's lessened the quality of the applicant. But, you know, again, we want to maintain a certain level of employee here, and we intend to do that.
I think there's a question here from Alderwoman Hanman.
Thank you. I'm just looking over the capital improvement plan for the police department, and kind of touching a little bit on what the mayor said, because I do see the same expenditure planned for replacement squads every year for the next 5 years. So I know you're on a rotating basis. So do you replace four every year? Is that kind of your standard, the way you have them?
We shoot for five, and like I mentioned, sometimes we get cut a little bit, and we go to four, and you know, we'll squeeze a little bit extra out of a car. And we try, what we, you know, try to rotate that to an assignment that may balance out over the years. So we've done that in the past, but you know, we try to shoot for like about five
okay.
times.
Because I noticed we have about the same amount. 2024 is a little bit higher, but for the remaining 3 years of that 5-year plan, we're flat. So as the mayor suggested, the prices of those may be going up over the next few years. So that might be something we'll just want to look at tweaking in the future here.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, nothing. Nothing too large. Otherwise, looking at it over the next 5 years, the modular vehicle barrier system looks like we're planning for next year.
Is that a question or something?
Oh, maybe talking to myself. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, relative to the squad cars, I think the turnover rate is, what, 24 months or kind of in that range, 24 to 30, 36?
Yeah, 24
to 36. We almost view it next to a, you know, an operating cost. I mean, there's $250,000 going out, give or take, and if one or two of them gets in an accident or something, there's an extra one added or whatever. That's the cost of having those vehicles on the road and wheels turning. But a good question, because it is an ongoing yearly expense. Other comments for the police chief or his staff as we kind of look at this? Staff-wise is the same. I know that's always an issue. We've talked about it. Mayor's talked about it. But that being said, any other questions? If not, thank you very much, Chief. Appreciate the time, and I know the community appreciates the work that you and your officers do on a day-in, day-out basis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
And next, we are going to move on to the fire department.
As you can probably see, our operating costs are up. I don't know that I call it slightly, but most of that is primarily due to personnel costs, contractual salary increases, and things like that. Most of our other operating lines are fairly flat. With a few exceptions, we've been able to make reductions in certain areas, but we know that we're still going to see increases in other areas. Medical supplies that we use every day on every run continue to just skyrocket through the roof. This started even before COVID, but COVID just exacerbated, and I don't see that trend slowing down. A lot of medications and supplies are even like on back order and are being rationed right now, so I don't expect a change in that trend. Obviously, our fuel costs, that's a big part of what we do. That's going to be unstable for some time. Other than that, I think we're pretty much where we've been. As far as capital purchases, we do have an ambulance request for next year. It's considerably higher than it's been only since 3 years ago when we last purchased the last one. That's just a supply chain and sourcing issue. The chassis themselves are getting very hard to find. Manufacturers have literally 20 boxes sitting in their shop, and they don't have any chassis to put them on. So we were fortunate enough to be able to order a demo, to work with our vendor to order a demo that we're not on the hook to buy, but they were able to place that order early. So that's a history of working with that particular vendor. Just an FYI, we maintain a fleet of 4 ambulances. 3 of those are frontline transporting paramedic units, but the fact that we are now the county's, and I believe the state's, only all paramedic department, we've actually been able to reduce the number of those transporting units that we have to keep in service. So we can run with 3 transporting units because whatever other apparatus arrives first is trained and equipped to treat and stabilize that patient at the paramedic level. That's been great for us efficiency and operations wise, but there's also some cost savings associated with that as well. Another thing, we have been working with the same ambulance manufacturer for the last several years, and we replace our oldest ambulance every 12th year. So that gives it 9 years as a frontline ambulance and a good 3 years as a solid backup, which we need because we transfer into that quite frequently to, you know, for maintenance and for special events and things like that. But after this ambulance purchase, we will be able to go through another whole 12-year cycle where we can just take the box off of one chassis and put it on a new chassis. That will save us, I'm not going to say half the cost, but it will seriously cut down on the cost for the next entire 12-year cycle. We treat the ambulance boxes very well, but by the end of that 12-year cycle, that chassis is pretty beat up, even though our shop maintains it well, our DPW. So that was one of our major capital items. Another one we do have, and it's not a major item, some extrication equipment. We're finding as we're busier and busier, if we were to keep all of our equipment on one apparatus, chances are it's not going to be available when that call comes in because it's committed to a previous run. So to have that distributed and have some sort of capacity for every one of our frontline heavy engines, we call them heavy pieces, but that's important, and it's going to get only more important as we continue to get busy. Two other big things, and they are somewhat associated, is the additional FTE position for another firefighter paramedic. That balances all 3 of our shifts out at 15, which also takes us out of the range for when a contractual commitment to employee time off generates the need for us to fill for that shift. Our overall staffing increases, but our minimums don't. So it takes us out of that range where if somebody's off for vacation or holiday, that we have to fill back for that position at overtime. So there is an offset there. Even though we are funding a new position, we won't see nearly, I'm not going to say we won't see any overtime because we'll still have FMLA and injuries and that type of thing, but we will see kind of a net offset. Along with that, there is funding for the Station 2 relocation design. Just a brief overview of this entire history of our, basically our staffing structural problem dates back 30 years ago when we transferred from a 40-hour Monday through Friday department to a 24-hour department to staff a paramedic unit. They took those holidays that were rolled into that Monday through Friday 40-hour week, which was 13 federal holidays plus some personal time off, and gave that to every person on every shift of a 24-hour cycle. So even though they would only likely work one in every three of those holidays, they gave them a day off for that. Now, in the beginning, that wasn't as big of a problem because we didn't necessarily maintain any standard minimum staffing, but over the years, as we've grown into a first-rate department, we've needed to maintain certain staffing standards and response levels, and that's why we've traditionally had to fill back a lot of these positions, because there was time off that probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. That was part one of our staffing problem. Part two was when we opened Station 2, which is actually our third station. It's just called Station 2. They used impact fees from the industrial park to build that station, and so they located it in the industrial park, but impact fees don't pay for any staffing. So we made our situation even worse by pulling people out of the other two stations to staff the third station. Our calls aren't in the industrial park. Our call volume is directly attributed to residential development, and that's the closest correlation to how busy we're going to be is how much residential development is coming in. I don't know if that's the best, because you kind of really got to stare at that graphic to figure it out.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit of a visual representation. So the current Station 2 is on 60th Street, almost at Oakwood. So it's very far south in our response area. And just to get to a major thoroughfare where we can get our response, and our goal is to provide a four-minute drive time, be within four-minute drive time of 90% of our calls. That's the standard from the National Fire Protection Association. So the project that we're looking at is moving, relocating that far southern station to the intersection, thanks, Mayor, to the intersection of 76th and Ryan.
So 20 years ago when that station was built, we didn't necessarily track all our response data, what kind of occupancies we're responding to for both fire and EMS calls, what's really generating what's making us busier. And it made sense to put it in the industrial park because that's where the impact fees are coming from. But our calls aren't in the industrial park, and it might sound counterintuitive, but it keeps me up a lot less at night worrying about a big warehouse building that's largely non-combustible materials with a sprinkler system, alarm system, and probably some type of internal safety system for employee injury or safety than it does for single-family residential that's lightweight construction, open concept, and it's built out in farm fields that there's really no protection. So if something happens in those locations, we need to be, that's where our response times really matter. So that what brought it evident that this is the time we need to address that with all the development coming in the Southwest. Along with that, that's where people have medical emergencies in their home, including cardiac arrest and the most serious calls you can get, and that's where we need to focus our attention. So that's why we wanted to, originally the idea was we'd build build that fourth station and staff it in the southwest when development occurred there. We had the suspicion that if we located in the right spot to be able to respond to that development in the southwest, that we wouldn't lose any time going east if we located it along the right thoroughfares.
Go to the next one, the colored maps. That's going to help us out. Yep. So the current, with the assistance of the city GIS department, we were able to actually calculate drive time similar to Google Maps, where you actually, they took into account the speed limits for the roads and kind of put a little bit of science to it, going back to that National Fire Protection Association standard where our goal is 4 minute drive time. So our current location here, the dark green area indicates which streets where we can get to within the 4 minute drive time. The lighter green is 5 minutes, and the even lighter shade is 6 minutes. So it goes by the drive times of the road.
And you can see the majority of this is completely undeveloped. This is all Root River. This is all industrial, which we said doesn't generate much call volume. And if by locating it here, we can get to all this development in the southwest. As roads build out here, this will turn darker green, and we can service all this residential area that currently we're not getting much help from over here. So,
and still maintain.
We're not losing anything to there.
Because again, we're on the major thoroughfares here, of both 76, Loomis, and Ryan.
So it's pretty evident to us that we can continue to operate for probably 20 years out of three stations if we locate that third station in a better spot.
Rut roll.
I think one thing that kind of gets forgotten sometimes is right now our station 2 only serves 717 residents today. If we move that station today, it serves over 3,000. So just moving that serves more residents.
And that's structures. That's structures of all type, whereas that's what we need to be able to respond to. So it makes sense to us that we can continue to do this for 20 plus years into the future, taking advantage of these better roads, and also that we should build this station to have a service life of 40 to 50 years rather than the 10 or 20 years looking ahead that we've historically done. That way we can always put more people in it because the roads are still going to be the best roads. And by doing that, the cost of running personnel costs for four stations, as opposed to continuing to run with three stations, is over $2.1 million per year, every year that we can keep doing that. And that gap's only going to get bigger as personnel costs increase. So we really feel this is the way to go. And if it wasn't the way to go, and if we were building a station four, we'd build it there anyway. So
Station 4 back in the day when we had a Station 4 wasn't too far from that location, right? When it was over by the House of Correction back
station
in the day?
Yeah, Station 4 was by the House of Correction.
Yeah.
It wasn't staffed. It was a paid-on-call
right,
station.
Right, paid-on-call, yeah.
That's only in personnel costs. If we would still have to build the station, but that's the personnel costs in staffing.
Yep. Increase as well. Another question down here. Go ahead, Alderwoman.
Thank you. And sticking to the topic of relocating the station, and I think you heard me last night echo or read the comments that you had made about the presentation.
Yes.
For the huge development that was proposed for the 76 and Rawson area. I want to be sure that we are planning for that, should that come to fruition, and what that looks like. So does this...
No.
That doesn't improve that situation.
It helps because
the one that shows all three
this
stations.
Location much better serves the other station's locations. And it's not just one station covers one station's area. They're busy on a call. Yeah. That next call is being handled by the station from further away. But these travel patterns, along with it being staffed 24/7 with four people, gets us there that much quicker. And it helps us support Station 3 more quickly by the high school, too, quite frankly. Being so far down on 60th Street off of Ryan Road with really no good access in any direction, this is kind of a no-brainer to us, but there's still cost with it, so.
And for those who weren't at the council meeting last night, part of our packet write-up and comments from the fire department was that with that significant increase in residential development and commercial development, they are not currently able to provide the level of service that we be, and did I paraphrase correctly?
That's correct. And this is probably going to develop over years.
Yes.
And we have talked to Peggy about the possibility of in 2024 writing for a SAFER grant that gets us three more people but allows us to phase in those costs over up to 4 years, which keeps it under the revenue expenditure limits. So that is doable. That solves our Station 2 problem, and it helps to support our other stations, but it doesn't completely offset. It's not the end as far as planning for 1,030 new residential units. It's not like we can just say, well, Greendale's going to take the call if we can't.
Right.
It's not fair to hand over that much to our neighbors when we're not staffed the way we should be. So we definitely need to keep planning and keep moving forward.
Well, and we kind of started that last year, right? There were two new firefighters that we brought on brand new last year. This third one kind of gets us that one full one, but this isn't the end. And I think that's what you're both trying to say is we have to keep continuing
yeah,
to
plan. Yeah, I don't think we mentioned that currently our Station 2, the minimum staffing is two firefighter paramedics there per day. Our other stations have four, so they're able to form a company to respond for a fire response, which requires four, or a medical. With Station 2, our goal is to have a four personnel there daily. But like Peggy mentioned, in order to get one body there daily, we actually need three of them, because like the police department, it's a 24-hour day, 365-day commitment. So just to get one person per day, we actually need a minimum of three bodies.
And another obstacle is a lot of this residential development is in TIF districts, especially apartment buildings. As soon as the apartment building is up, there's residents there. We're getting calls there. So it impacts our call volume almost immediately. But it's not generating the revenue to pay for positions, only to pay back the infrastructure costs. So it's kind of a double-edged sword for us.
Right.
The development is good, and they will come off the tips one day, but we see an immediate impact, and especially with something like senior housing, that's like immediate.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
as I mentioned, I need to excuse myself. Chief, I want to thank you and the staff for the information.
Thank you.
And that goes to my point that as we're seeing this expansive development come in all at once, I mean, yes, over a couple of years, but and I wished I had said this to police when they were still here, but for us as a finance committee to keep in mind, and I would urge my council colleagues to keep it in mind too, it would be nice to see as this goes through the approval process and the planning stages what the needs are going to be from fire and police and what that budget impact is going to look like, because I think those are things we really need to analyze very carefully when we're looking at the financial benefits and costs of a large development like that.
That's exactly what the mayor was talking about earlier when he was talking about those total costs of development. It's just something we have to get better at thinking of. And I think all the plan review that they do, all the staff members do right now, really puts a bit of a spotlight on it. But what we really need to do is just magnify it and make sure that we know what that long-term outcome is.
One quick question. When you talked about that four-minute target, is that both on a fire response as well as an EMS response?
It's 4 minutes of travel time. And it's 4 minutes of travel time for that first due unit, which to us it's important that that first due unit be a full company, especially if it's a bad cardiac arrest, medical issue, or a structure fire. Because by state law, anybody, you need two backup personnel for any two people going in a structure fire. So if we're less than that four-person company, by law, we're not supposed to be going in there and doing internal interior firefighting. We'd have to set up and knock down what we can from the exterior. And with modern construction being so lightweight, so many synthetic furnishings and open concepts, it's you really have to get in there quick if you're going to make a difference. So it evolves much more quickly from a room and contents fire to it actually impacting the structural integrity of the building and putting occupants and our crews, quite frankly, in greater danger. So the type of development that we're seeing, it's very important that we're stationed and staffed to be able to respond to it very quickly.
And right now, that station two doesn't have that personnel available 24/7, correct?
Correct. Now, we've made some adjustments through bargaining and the way we pick time off, holidays, vacations, and things like that, that we are seeing benefits of it. There's four people at Station 2 today. In the spring and towards the fall and winter, that'll be greater numbers of 3 and 4 at Station 2, whereas we've allowed vacation to kind of bunch up in the middle of the year, and there's days that we don't have that staffing there. But there's also incentive for people to not, we used to make them take holidays throughout the year so it was evened out as far as overtime liability, and people had to take days off in February, and now they don't have to take those days off. They can sell them back, so there is some incentive, and we're starting to see benefits from that. But we still, at the end of the day, we still need to add people.
One question, the existing facility, is there a potential game plan for that should this move forward?
Not.
It's a good question. We're still working on that one. I think there's some ideas that perhaps a park building might be appropriate, but really until we do something major with the design and the beginning of construction, because this construction will have something to do with DPW, because it would be on the site that DPW is on now. Only there would have to be a storage building for DPW built. So we're going to have to play the chess pieces and kind of see how that goes. But if it's determined not to be used, obviously we're going to try to market it. And it's not a bad building, so
right.
It can be.
There's another component to all of that. Our fire department is very active with the other fire departments in the area as well as the county. And we got to keep in mind that if something happens positively where we do some shared service or some consolidation, the location of that of Station 1 right over here may be important to covering us and the south side of Greendale and the south side of Hales Corners. So whatever decisions get made based on the recommendations of our professionals, we need to not be rash and quick in disposing of that building, even though we all think it's in a bad spot. It may not be in a bad spot in the future. But you all need to know that there's lots of how to work more effectively together. And our management team has been leaders in that.
And we want to...
Another question for you. So you think that this structure that you're proposing is going to carry you how far into the future? Best guess.
How much money do you want to give him?
I would say at least 20.
Okay. I think you said that earlier.
And what we are thinking with this building is we will build it for well past that. So okay. We don't have to build another building, but we will have room to add more companies to it.
Okay.
So if we have a four-person company and we two-person med unit, two-person engine company, maybe we get to the point where we need another two-person med unit in that station. So it makes this easier to add it in an increment, incremental.
Oh, I got
the,
thank you.
The other thing that it potentially will help us out with is the new facility is supposed to is planned to have a larger training area, which currently we don't have a large conference room training area, as well as our administrative offices will move there, which will free up space at our current Station 1, which, as the mayor said, the location of it at Loomis and Drexel is very strategic. So that would free up some room there if we would need to add people for the planned, you know, development in that area or shared services consolidation. It would free up some space there that could be used for.
Yeah, it would let us do the same incremental growth to adjust as that new development gets built out, because we'll free up office space that can be converted to living space.
Thanks.
It's a number of moving pieces with that. I know DPW has their piece of the pie in this, but it's obviously discussion and dialogue that we have to continue to undertake, study, because we are going to continue to see development on that south side of our community. Other questions for the...
Just a last comment. I've done a lot of data analytics for my company over the last 20 years. I really give you guys a lot of credit for what you've done here. This is some of the best analysis I've looked at top level, and really hats off to you, all three of you. I'm trying to figure out when you fight fires and save people, knowing all this. This is really, and I look forward to diving into this data even more. So thank you. I really like what you've done.
Our bargaining unit tells us we should hire somebody to do a study, and I'm like, here's the study. Who knows this more than we do?
I'm sure other people pull from you. If they haven't, they will. So it's really a nice job.
Yeah, the definition of an expert is
50 miles. But in all seriousness, these guys do amazing planning. You know, we do a lot of budget work in July, August, September. When did you call us in May and said, hey, can we all sit down and have a strategic planning session? Last year, I think council member, the mayor, were brought into another strategic planning. So the planning and the organization and the strategy that they spend time on is going to be priceless for this community, especially a growing community. So we're super lucky.
And I would say our folks in the street, you probably heard our radios chattering. I think they're on like 3 or 4 calls right now as we're here. So it's only getting busier and busier for us. So we do a lot with a small number of people. Nice job.
Well, and I think, you know, we have to be probably cautious how I say this, but I think the mayor knows that there's discussions with other communities going on around these topics and how to best serve it, and is consolidation a possibility, and if so, how do you go about it, and who has the knowledge or the brain power, the expertise to, you know, bring that along. It's not just our, you know, 37 square miles or whatever the city consists of. I think as we kind of go down, you talk about 20 years at that location. Well, 20 years from now, I think, you know, a fire response or emergency response could look, you know, completely different for the southern portion of Milwaukee County. And I think, you know, Franklin's going to have a key role in if and how that probably comes about.
And I think despite the fact that we're behind from the start here, we're going to be in a much better position, and other departments around us and communities around us that are landlocked and don't see this type of development are going to be cutting resources and cutting people. So they're not going to be there to help us when we need it, but once our growth is, our tits are paid off, we'll be in pretty good shape.
Well, and there's also some impact fees that generate directly to fire and police. Am I correct, Peggy?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so, well, this it's a little tricky with this because this is kind of a relocation of Station 2. This
it's
new
not
Station
all
2.
Growth, but
so it'll only be a part of it. But we're factoring that into all of our plans. Yeah. But yes, you're right. That will weigh in, and everything new happening in the Southwest area. You know, there's a fire impact fee, as you mentioned, to police. You know, all of those.
Right. Excuse me. Any other comments from the committee relative to police? Shari, you have your hand up? Or?
No. Sorry.
Okay. Anything else? If not, we'll continue on. Thank you again for your time this evening. Appreciate that very much. that's the wish of the committee, let's go ahead and do that. It's about, 5:30? Let's go ahead and try in, 15 minutes, if we can. I understand there's some pizza to the left there. Yeah, let's go ahead and reconvene if that's okay. I know some of us have some goodies here at the table. That's fine. Sandy has been patiently waiting. I think she sent the mayor home, so she must have some good comments for us. But I think we're up, page 79? Am I looking at this correctly?
So I just wanted to point out when we were doing the – so Sandy will be covering the clerk, the alderman, the elections, weights and measures, and St. Martin's Fair, and weed control. And when I was looking at these pages, she's in every section. So, I mean, I got to the back of DPW. I'm like, oh, there's Sandy with weed control. So you're flipping all over, but she'll be covering all of it.
We do a little bit of everything. Our goal in the office is to provide the ultimate customer service, whether it's somebody complaining or questioning or a mandate that we got from the state or from the city or sometimes from the federal government. But it's really customer service. And if you want to start with 79 or 74?
74.
Okay. So this is the alderman's budget.
74.
There are obviously no personnel amount changes. We're not adding, we're not subtracting, we're not taking out any salaries, we're not adding salaries. There is, in 2023, there is the potential to have four new elected officials or remain with four old ones. But there are four local elections up, and so there is, we put a little more in for printing in case there's business cards or badges or anything that would relate to, or training material for a new elected official. And then the other adjustment from, that's it on that one. As you can see, the excitement is why that the crowd has stuck around.
I'm just excited about the printing.
The next one is page 79. And as I'm sure you are aware, after almost 38 years, I will be leaving. And the fortunate thing about the budgets that I cover, they're pretty standard. They vary in the elections from every other year. However, I prepared the budget as if it's me still going to be here, or if it, I kept in mind if somebody has a project, a special project, they'll have to come before the council for approval. But I don't see that the first year that happening. So the changes are an increase in filing fees. Those are items that the Common Council approves, and we have to record with the Register of Deeds office that has. With all development, every aspect of the Common Council, whether it's a park that gets added, our office takes care of park reservations, park questions, park rental. Anything that the council approves seems to have an impact on our office. We've adjusted accordingly. Someday we'll probably bust at the seams, but I won't be here to see the splatter on the wall, so. But the more things that are approved, the more things that have to get recorded, that it has been bumped up a little bit. And that that I think was it. Then there's the elections. We're probably the only department that percentage-wise drops the most one year and then increases the most the next year. So we're going from a four-election governor election to a two-election year next year. It still is going to be a somewhat busier election than another off year because there is a mayoral race and there are three aldermen up for an election. And they are on three-year rotating terms, so this will be the biggest local part of the election. When we have four local races on a ballot, the costs to the municipality, which are prorated for programming and printing of ballots and different things, are going to be a little bit higher. So as you can see, there's a big decrease in the temporary salaries, which are the poll workers, election workers. There is a decrease in data processing services, which is the programming of the ballot tabulating machines and the scanners that we have on election day. We do the programming for the electronic poll books, so there's no cost. We do that internal in the office. Joe, you'll be glad to see that printing went down to 2,000. And obviously that's for the printing of the ballots. That'll offset the alderman's increase there. And the facility rental covers $150 per election charge to the Polish Center and to St. Martin of Tours Church. We don't pay any rental for the police department to ourselves, nor do we pay rental for use of the sports complex, the Milwaukee County Sports Complex. So that's it on the elections. Next is Sealer of Weights and Measures, and we contract through the state for their inspection services. This year we were notified that instead of the fee of $7,600, they were going to be restructuring their inspection and they were going to be inspecting locations on a every other year basis. So they quoted us at $4,000. We have in the offsetting revenue account for Sealer of Weights and Measures, we have $4,900. In addition to what we are able to bill for an inspection service that the state bills us, we're able to charge a $20 license fee to anybody who has a device. So a gas station has to pay $20. Pick and Save and Sendix pay $20. Because they have scales. When the state goes out and inspects, they charge us, which we in turn charge them, per device. So sometimes you can have, you know, a heavily inspected place that has scales and weighing devices and measuring devices. They could actually have up to a $1,000 bill that we're turning around and sending them for payment to the state.
Is that something that goes on to their property tax bill, or do you have to physically mail a bill for that?
We physically mail a bill. So we mail a bill for the inspection services for only those that get inspected. We've been fortunate that they have paid. I think once we had one who didn't pay, and I'm pretty pretty sure that it was able to be on the tax bill as a special charge. There's only certain things that can go on a tax bill.
Is that something that could become a general practice to put on their tax bill as a special charge and kind of take the manual labor of having to print those bills and mail them out?
Actually, the printing of the bills, because we also include the license fee.
Okay.
So those, it's more so the billing isn't the problem, the time-consuming problem. The problem is the calculation of the devices. Sounds like an odd thing to, the state just tells us, we inspected 10 devices at Menards. And based on what the device is, we have to do the calculating of the amount to charge them. So just to summarize that, the candy scale at Hallmark, if it's even still here, can generate more of a charge than the quarry scale for 1,000-pound chunks of rock and concrete, or the landfill. The little candy scale, just being temperamental and getting down to the nth of a ounce, can generate more. So it's the actual billing. It's not the actual process of sending them the bill. It's the creation of the bill that's pretty technical.
But the state basically says that
correct. And they're going to relook. I think in addition, they have the state set up into zones. And I know that they did lose some employees, and they were going to look at how they were going to restructure their zones. So they said in 2023, that's what your bill is going to be. Now, that may change for the future. But that will be the new clerk's burden. Yeah, so they still said they were still going to do the same amount of hours. I don't know if it's going to be the, maybe it includes transportation time from wherever somebody's coming. But and just as a side note, there are municipalities such as Greendale that have their own sealer weights and measures, or have it incorporated into another department. But it's really, as you can see, pretty efficient to have the state do it. Next is St. Martin's Fair. The only thing on this one is the Fair Commission raised the peddler's permit fee that we charge. They raised it a small amount for 2022. Obviously, it is not enough to offset the payment of the police, fire, and public works departments. So if we didn't have to reimburse salaries, it would be just fine. But Peggy or Denise can explain the fund and how we make up for those charges at the end of a year.
So this is a really important event for the community, but it's not a moneymaker. So what the council has done in the past is, you know, there's a certain amount, $11,000, that goes to St. Martin's Fair, but then every couple of years we have to basically supplement it, and it's a special fund 529 is the division code in the general fund, and then it's got its own fund, and we just make that whole at the end of the year with our remaining funds from the general fund.
If it were just, if there were no personnel services involved between the restroom facility rental and the speaker rental and garbage bag costs, that would be offset by the $11,000 plus the amount that we sell the permits for. That would make it a wash, but when you add the personnel costs and. Because of personnel services, police, fire, and public works.
It's a needed event, so I get it. I mean, I don't go with it.
We sell the intercompany transfer. Basically, the emergency services that are required because of public's attendance is at least monitored and tracked, but it's being provided by the city police department and fire department.
Our office regulates the permits. We do the sale of every vendor has to have a permit and the church has nothing to do with it. In fact, they had to get a permit this year because they were selling beer in the parking lot. Well, I think one of the civic groups were
thank you. Sorry to derail you.
And the last one is weed control. So this is a in-out. Our office receives the weed complaints. We notify the weed commissioner. If there is a violation, we then send the property owner a certified letter. They have so many days to cut it. If they don't cut it, we notify the cutter. He goes in and cuts it, and then we bill the property owner at $90 an hour plus an administrative fee. This is another one that we do the billing throughout the year. It starts from May 15th, according to state law, and it goes through the first frost. So in about September, our office starts praying for cold weather.
What kind of notifications this year?
It did pick up in August and September. But again, we're approaching the end of the year. These are another item that state law allows anything unpaid to be rolled over onto the tax roll. And this does usually generate, because most of the people, if they're not going to cut the grass, some of them also don't pay their bill until it gets rolled on the tax roll. So this is really a wash. The only expense on it is publishing of a official notice, which is required by state law. So you'll notice in most of these budgets, most of the items are controlled, mandated by state law. Have no choice. So.
All right. Any other questions or comments for Sandy? Hearing none, let's go ahead and move on. What do we have? Animal control and...
That's one I don't have.
So I'm the lucky person that gets to do the animals. So we work with MADC, Milwaukee Area Domestic Animal Control Commission. Basically all of the communities in Milwaukee County do. We do that through a joint venture. They're on 35th and Burnham. They do a really good job at animal control in all of the county areas. But there are certain fixed fees. There's an operational fee each year, and there's a debt payment fee. Now, they've been doing really well. They're really saving up for their next large improvement. The facilities there are amazing. They're different from a humane society in that they don't pick and choose what they get, right? They get what people leave or find or has been astray or just, a lot of times it's even wild. They've been dealing with a lot of exotics, et cetera. Karen Sarapani is the head of MADC, and she does just a really good job at keeping the communities informed. She comes to the ICC meetings every month so that she can inform on where they're at. And it's a tough job they do, and for the $47,000 that we pay them, it's a really good deal for the community, because that means our police officers don't have to do it. In some communities that don't have animal control, they'll put that on their police officers, and it's just not a good mix.
In those rare instances when we have exotic animals that get loose and require police assistance, do we have a policy in place that we can charge that back to the residents? The cost of that public service.
So if we call Matic, they will take care of it and they will charge those people appropriately.
Okay.
If we do it internally, we really don't have a fee structure for that, but I haven't heard in Franklin that that's happened too much. But
the kangaroo right after
yeah,
I go.
Oh, yeah, the kangaroo. Yeah, that's for sure a big one.
The goats.
There is another one.
We do the goat thing here, though. I'm not sure if you know, but we actually have animal licenses that happen down in planning for goats.
Mm-hmm.
I just learned that in the last 6 months. So.
But they do get loose occasionally.
Right.
And
right.
End up
by here.
Yeah, it's getting tougher and tougher, I think, with all the different animals that are around.
All right. Anything else there? Questions, comments, continuation?
I have seen some really large increases in those expenses in small communities where they don't have a Matic, because it's independent people, and they just, I mean, the increase went from $150 to $200 to $250 to $300
right.
in two and a half years.
Yep.
Yeah. So it is nice to have a somewhat control. It is. It really. I've been involved with a lot of different animal control commissions over the years, and Matic does it just at a really effective cost, and they provide a lot of good services. They do community spay days and all of those kind of things. They help the low and moderate income residents of the county. So it really is a pretty good operation. And then it helps us not to have strays all around our community.
So just out of curiosity, just basic question. So somebody calls and says, you know, we caught a dog, I don't know who it belongs to, they call FPD, they send a squad, and then the police department holds the animal until Matic arrives? Do they take the animal
sometimes
to the station
that happens,
sometimes?
Depending on the hours of the day, sometimes Matic will come and get it. So the PD would make the next call right to Matic sometimes. But
okay.
When they can't do that, sometimes they'll take it to Matic. It just depends what kind of safety issue is going on at the time.
Okay.
But Matic is really good. They do have a lot of hours covered throughout the days, nights, and weekends for them to be the dog catchers, if you will.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's move on. See Recreation, page 190.
And Recreation is basically made up of three items. The first one is there's a $13,000 transfer to the Civic Celebrations. I think everybody knows about the Civic Celebrations Committee. Their basic function is the Independence Day celebration, usually a 3 or 4 day event. They are now doing the Christmas parade. They hosted the Wall That Heals. So this transfer from the city to the Civic Celebrations Fund is really the only commitment that the city makes, other than those internal staffing. You know, there's police, public works, fire, different departments that help out with that. But they all charge their time to the Civic Celebrations budget, which we're going to look at on another day. It's actually Fund 29. And then the celebrations committee, because of their ticket sales and you know, all of the concessions and things that they sell, they are able to cover all of that. So this is the only what you might call subsidy from the city. And I believe I heard a number of years ago this was like a firework donation. Kind of that's how it started. So $13,000 is the total that the city pays to the Civic Celebrations, and their budget is over $100,000. The other two pieces, there's two, so we don't have a senior center in the community. I know there's, you know, some talk every once in a while about having one, but there's two things that the taxpayers do for senior citizens. One of them is the travel. There's a travel group. They go to the fireside and maybe down to Chicago and different things. The city simply funds the bus for that endeavor, and then the senior travel people pay the rest of it. The senior citizen activities, and they just started this back up again in recent months, I think June, and the health department is actually involved in it now, is they do a once-a-month luncheon for the seniors. And so that's this $10,000 contribution that happens throughout the year. So that's basically the city's contribution to an effort in lieu of having a senior center.
But the seniors also contribute when they go to the luncheon. They pay a portion. I think this, right, the city gives them $10,000 towards the program, but then each senior when they go, yeah, I don't know.
I think it's $5 right now when they restart it up. In fact, we've been having some discussions on that, and the question that we received was, can the city only pay $5? Well, the city pays $10,000. They choose to use it up in one or two lunches versus 12. That's up to them. But they were just talking about moving venues and different things. And there's a really good group. There was a good group. Fred Knepel and Casper Green were, of course, long time, did a ton of things for the city. And they had it one way. And now there's a different group of volunteers doing the senior luncheon activities. And they're just trying to make it better and provide a really good activity or program for the seniors. So the mayor's opinion up until this point has been, if it costs a little bit more, that's what it's for, is those senior activities. And they have not asked for any increases.
But if you do try to decrease it, you will get a lot of increases.
It's a big, yeah, it was the senior travel, even the senior travel, because they couldn't do a lot of travel. Yeah. So one day the council chambers were full because somebody thought that the council wanted to decrease the costs, and so. Means a lot. Exactly. Yep, absolutely. So that's the last department we have. We did throw another item on, and I know you all have some commitments, so it's really up to you whether you want to look at it tonight. We could walk you through the book really quick, just to make you a little more familiar with that. If you're interested, we could tell you maybe about some of the general fund revenues and expenditures, personnel. We talked about some of the changes here, or we can pick this up tomorrow night. I do think that tomorrow night will be a shorter night. I know it's a larger list, but if you draw a line after sanitary sewer, we have, you know, a very short health department budget, a very short economic development. You'll hear from Public Works. That will take a little time, but all the rest of them are Denise and myself. And they're really pretty general government-oriented, straightforward services that will be pretty quick, so we can certainly pick those up tomorrow. It's really just the pleasure of the committee.
Personally, if you wanted to do the overview, I think that'd be helpful. We've got a couple of new members as well. I know you're limited.
Yeah, I gotta get rolling. What about an ETA on that? Best guess.
If you have 10 minutes, we can get it done in 10
minutes.
I mean, look at the budget, it's pretty straightforward. So basically, in front of section one is just an intro. And let me start with, there's a presentation in the back of your packet. Okay. This was given to the council last night. It was longer than I thought it would be. It was about an hour and 15 minutes. However, there was a lot of good discussion and some good feedback, so if you wanted to watch that on our YouTube channel, you're more than welcome to do that, or if you want to page through and ask us any questions, we're happy to answer them. But those are pretty much of the highlights of the budget. But before section one, there's a letter from myself, and it basically is just an executive overview. We're going to talk about a lot of the items in here on the third night, the debt, the TIDs. Those are some things, financial planning, capital. Those are some things that I think the Finance Committee in this next year is going to be asked to weigh in on a lot. I'm not sure if we ever came back to the Finance Committee yet, but the park purchase went through. Council approved it. It's closing this Friday. So the city will be a proud owner of a 75-acre park down in the Southwest area, and that helps us with our impact fees, and we'll talk about all of that. But those are the kind of things that are in the letter. And then after that, there's really just some overview information. There's a one page on page 8. It's just simply a one page snapshot of all of the funds. Just some housekeeping type things, the budget process, calendar. We do have on pages 11 and 12, it's just simply an opportunities and threats. It's not really a budget per se item, but it helps us know what we have to be aware of, what's coming, what the risks are. I'd say one of the biggest things in here talks about landfill siting. How long does that last, and what does the city have to do, to be prepared for that? The good news is that's probably going to go on for a few more decades, so it's not an immediate issue, but this is kind of our continuity from year to year to let perhaps people that come after us know about that.
starting on page 13 till I believe page 16, or no, I'm sorry, page 18, talks about our assessed value, where we're at. Just really, in short, we'll talk about it a lot more in detail on day three, but in short, the tax rate went down, just like the mayor said, the tax rate went down because the values went up. So anybody who has an increase in their property value of less than like 10.5% is going to see zero change. Oh, 10.5 is the equilibrium. Anything less than that, they're going to see a reduction. Anything more than that, they're going to have an increase. So the tax rate, the equalized tax rate, which is the tax rate that compares us to the rest of the state, is going from 481 down to 437. The assessed tax rate we don't have yet. We're going to have it soon. Our numbers are bearing out about 440, 439 to 440. But we're going to know that sometime in October. So this just gives you historical assessed value, equalized value, some calculations. We did want to show you our levy limit worksheet, and again, we'll talk about that on the last night when we talk about revenues, but it's basically our limited resources that we're able to gain on our own through a state law. So, and then really the rest of this section are just summary pages that put all the budget together. In section one, there's just information on personnel. The first page is just a clear snapshot of the entire organization, all of the full-time equivalent employees we have. You will see on the next page, there's a few positions we have that are not funded. And then our pay scale, our current year pay scale. I will tell you one of the initiatives, and two, we talked a lot about recruitment and retention and how are we gonna do that. We don't have a true merit program. I know we talked about that earlier. That's something we want to work on, but we also have $50,000 in this budget to do an update to our classification and compensation program, and the reason for that is because we know through our hiring and departures that we're not a high payer. I think Franklin's aware of that. I'm not saying we can get to be where some other communities are. I think there's other reasons why people come to Franklin, but that update to the class and comp study, the last one was done in 2015, implemented in 16, so we're about 7 years out, and if I had to guess, I'd say we're a bit away from the market, so that's an initiative, just knowing the labor market we're in, that we're considering for 2023.
Your market rates here for salary, this is just average of the cities, or are you talking about the West?
This is just us, so we have a list of comparables in our classification and compensation study. It's a list of geographic and size comps. So there's some in Milwaukee County and then like Sun Prairie. It happens to just be a very similar city to us in a different location. They're one of our comps. So we're happy to show you that information. And then there were some personnel requests that didn't get approved. That would be page 43. You'll see a dark line under the ones that the mayor put in his budget versus the ones that he didn't. We do have some ideas on the communication intern, but the communication intern, and then I'm sure you're going to hear more about some of the DPW ones coming tomorrow night, as well as there was a second community service officer, CSO, requested by the police department, and we do think over time we'll be able to fit that in. It really is a good recruitment tool. A lot of communities have been doing this for a number of years, is you get a CSO, get them a little bit interested in law enforcement, they do what they're supposed to, they follow the rules. Hey, why don't you go to police academy? We pay for that. The state pays us back. And boom, all of a sudden we have an employee. So that is a really good program. And then behind that is just the request. On page 2 to 3, maybe this is one of the ones we might want to talk a little bit about. There's about 10 pages in here that are reserved for revenues. It basically walks you through all the revenues in the general fund. General fund is our largest fund. We have some special revenue funds we'll talk about later, but really the meat and potatoes of the entire budget is in page 54, and then expenditures start on 65 and end on 71, I believe. And then really sections 3, 4, 5, and 6 are all just the regular general fund budgets that go with the expenditure summaries in the front. So you're going to be hearing from, in sections 3, 4, 5, and 6, that's what you're hearing from all of these 2 days. So you're going to hear a lot about everybody's, but you can pull any department up by name and see what their staffing is, what their goals are, what their spending is, you know, what kind of weird things they have going on. But the departments are doing a really good job of telling that as well. Section 7, special revenues. Solid Waste Fund is a special revenue fund.
Our sanitary sewer fund is in there. It's technically an enterprise fund. It just basically gets put into this budget. And then there's a number of small special revenue funds. That's the Civic Celebration, St. Martin's Fair. We have a donations fund and some small grant funds, mainly for health, police, and fire. Section 8, a lot of spending happens in here, just shy of $20 million. So that's something we're going to go through a little bit. We're seeing the departments talk about their projects, but then on night three, we'll just walk through that. Section 9, how do we pay for all those capital projects? There's our debt section. We'll talk about that. There's also a lot of debt information in the letter. I just put in there, you know, I know, Chairman, you talk about this a lot, about where are we at, what's our internal limit, how much are we spending on TIDs, things like that. I've got a lot of caveats in the letter this year about that, because we have 67% of our debt outstanding right now is for tax incremental financing districts. Now, we're not worried today about those districts not meeting their shortfall payments, but going forward, because of the amount of debt that was borrowed and the values that we're seeing, we're not going to see $100,000 to $200,000 shortfalls by 2024-25. We could be seeing hundreds of thousand dollars worth of shortfalls. So the question is just, how are we going to plan and prepare for that in case if that doesn't happen? And type.
Is that worst case scenario, or is that just projected reality?
That's best guess at this point by value created. But you'll see some of those details. We have the Section 10, which is the last section, is the tax incremental financing districts, which I think will probably merit a good 30-minute discussion on the last day as well, because there's a lot going on in each of our TIDs. We have a one-page summary that we're going to show you for each TID, showing you what it looks like, and you're going to be able to pick out exactly where those shortfalls start hitting and why. Because when you borrow one TID district, we have $9 million of debt, one we have $27 million, but you can see the value that's been created. I'll also let you know the value that should have been created by the agreement, and you're going to see the discrepancies there. And that's not to mean, you know, we're early in a lot of those tax incremental financing districts. We closed three this year. Four will be closing in 2023. And then, really, TID 5 didn't start until 2017. So those are just very new. So I don't want to alarm anyone, but it does look like there will be some shortfall gaps that we just have to make some good planning choices on. And keep in mind, we have two school districts that have TIDs. One is Oak Creek Franklin, that's TIDs 4 and 8, and then we have 5, 6, and 7 that are in just the Franklin School District. We actually, when Velo Village sold last year, well, it sold this year, but the plans went into place last year and we made an agreement, they actually paid the city $4 million. That $4 million can be a donor to other TIDs if needed. So that's one of our stopgap measures, if you will, on how we might fund that. So we'll talk about that in detail. And then there should be a self-insurance fund, our health insurance fund for our employees and retirees at the back of this. The intro is in there. We're still working on the budget that is going to be discussed with the personnel committee on the 18th of October. But by the time we hit the third meeting next week, we'll have some details for you to look at it. Not a lot of changes that we're expecting for 2023. So that's really the layout of the book. You'll be hearing, like I said, from a couple more departments tomorrow night. And then after those departments are done, we'll go through those general government items. And then just depending on things, where things are at, we might want to hit revenues and expenditures so that on the final night we can talk capital, TID, debt. But what I will tell you is, don't feel rushed. Yes, we have three meetings right now, but the budget doesn't get considered by council until November 15th. The only rush you might say is we have a hearing notice to put out. And the hearing notice has to be in the newspaper by the end of October, because it's a 15-day required notice before the public hearing. And unfortunately, if it's going to publish on a Wednesday, a whole week and a half before that, we have to have it to the newspaper. So that's the rush, if you will. But if we get done with three meetings and the committee says, you know what, number one, maybe we're not ready to give recommendations to the council, maybe that's not going to happen until October meeting, it's okay. We can publish the hearing notice with the then current budget. That's the state law. And we can continue on with the deliberations. If you want to have another meeting, we could do that. And I told council the same thing. If there's extra time that's needed, that's not an issue at all. So please don't feel rushed. But I think hearing it, like I said, my presentation last night was about an hour and 15 minutes. In 3 years, that's the longest one. But honestly, I feel like we're finally having some really good discussions about where are our hot buttons, what are the things we're doing really well, what are, you know, some of the planning stuff that we have going forward. So I think we're making some progress on that whole thing, and I think in 2023, if we can clean up our capital planning process a little bit so we really have a planning time period, like in the spring, we're going to help ourselves a lot when we have to come up with some of those big dollars for those bigger expenditures. So that's the overview.
Sounds good.
That was pretty close. 11 minutes.
So all of you that had any sleeping issues, consider them solved. Just take this with you and keep it near your bedside, and it will cure any ills you have. Thank you so much, Peggy and Denise, for both of you. I think the mayor echoed it, and I want to as well on behalf of the committee. I know that this is a monumental process, but yeah, I think there's an old saying, garbage in, garbage out. I mean, a lot of this planning detail starts early on. I sense that the departments are starting to become allies, maybe that's a little bit too generous. But in years past, I mean, I always got the sense that it was, you know, kind of this and that, and do we have to do that again? It's July. Can't we wait till September? I mean, these things become repetitive, but I think they have a vested interest. It's their people, it's their lives, it's their jobs, it's their service. I mean, if they're committed to doing the duties that, you know, they're hired to do, this is really all in their best interest. And if you have the leadership that promotes that, I think it just percolates all the way through. So
absolutely, and the comments I made about the fire couldn't be more true. You know, they know what's coming, they know what that means to their operations. There's a couple departments that we're still carrying along on that and trying to get them a little closer to it, but yes, every time a budget gets balanced and something gets cut, I think somebody pays a little bit more attention. Everybody pays a little bit more attention. And Franklin's lucky. We have landfill siting, $2.3 million to $2.5 million that no one else has. We have impact fees. That's not as common. So we have resources available. Our general fund debt is like $6 million. That's unheard of. So we have a lot of good things going for us. So I don't think things are as strapped here, but you're right. Each year, you know, if we have this much spending, we're trying to take our budget and just squeeze it down each year. So the police chief, you heard him say this is a tight budget. I think he probably panicked a little bit right away, and then he went back and looked and said, it's tight, but I think I can do it, and that's the kind of working together we need.
So I guess, as they used to say in the old Batman series, same time, place tomorrow, 4 p.m.
Yep.
Thank you all. And I don't know, have you spoken to John?
I have not. I'll reach out to him tomorrow. I'll ask Lisa to reach out to him and make sure he's
shoot him
aware
an email
of the time.
That, yeah. Because
exactly.
I'm kind of surprised, and I don't see John necessarily all the time either, but I'm just surprised that he's not here.
Yeah.
He may have gotten confused like that, because I saw the second email from Lisa. I'm like, okay, are we just doing it on Tuesday of next week? So that's why I emailed her again as a check.
Yeah.
I'm like, are we starting at 4 tomorrow? Or so that, and that's how I...
We'll
John,
check in on that.
John,
sure.
John
he's
knows.
Very reliable.
Yeah,
absolutely.
John knows.
Yeah.
So I'm suspecting there's something going on, but and probably if you'd ask Lisa to do that, I'd appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Yeah.
All right. Are we going to actually adjourn, or are we just going to postpone or recess until and keep these together? How do you want
to
do it?
It's really up to you. I mean, we're happy to do, if you recess, we'll do one set of minutes.
Yeah.
But if you, the last couple of years, we've adjourned at each meeting and done them. We didn't bring the minutes back until the regular meeting.
Yeah, we brought them all together.
So it's really the committee's pleasure.
Preference? Otherwise, I'd say let's keep it the same, because that way we can at least kind of wrap it up day by day. Otherwise, it may get a little convoluted. So with that being said, until tomorrow at 4 p.m., let's do a motion to adjourn.
I'll move to adjourn. Second.
A motion and a second to adjourn. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you again, and we'll see you tomorrow at 4.